Please make that horrible music stop before my ears start bleeding. It's horrible. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me. All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and the classic album Clash is back. I got a trio of special guests, a different band, and two unbelievable albums to break down in Pit Head. This is the best slash worst band you've ever heard in your life. I'm talking about Nitro, but the guys from the Pod of Thunder return, Andy, Nick, the Jones Brothers, and the mysterious Chris L, are back talking about the band that we're focusing on today. Like I said, Nitro, the best worst band you've ever heard. And the albums under comparison review are 1989's OFR, which stands for Outrageous, and 1992's Nitro 2, Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. Didn't make it up. This is all real stuff. Nitro was a short-lived, over-the-top heavy metal band that formed in Hollywood, California in about 1989. And those are the only two albums they released. They broke up in 1993, not long after Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat came out. Nitro was basically Jim Gillette on vocals and Michael Angelo Battio on guitar. There's a lot of reasons why you've probably never heard of them, and a lot of reasons why you might have heard of them. And we're about to give you more reasons why you should check them out or stay away from them after listening to this show. It's a traditional classic album clash filled with our first experiences with Nitro, how we found them. We've got some great stories, trivia, production details. And of course, to do the traditional classic album clash song by song breakdown that culminates in a winner, or at least what we feel is the best, if you can even say that, of these two albums. The Nitro Classic Album Clash is here, and so is the new Fozzy record, Boombox, drops May 6th. You can pre-order it today wherever you buy and stream music, and come see the second leg of Fozzy's Save the World Tour. We had a very successful first leg. It was amazing. Played a bunch of amazing shows, packed houses, and met a bunch of great people at VIP. You can join us there as well. And you can join us in New Orleans next Thursday, April 28th at the Southport Music Hall. April 29th, Houston, Texas at Warehouse Live. April 30th, San Antonio, Texas at the Rock Box. May 1st, Austin, Texas. Come and take it live. May 2nd, Dallas, Texas, Amplified Love. So many more dates, including the Whiskey A Go-Go on May 5th. Denver, Colorado at the Oriental Theater on May 13th. May 16th in Saugat, Illinois, at the world-famous Pops. Go check out all the other cities to FozzyRock.com for tickets and VIP information. You're not going to want to miss the VIP. We hang out with you, do a Q&A, sign whatever you want. We play a five-song mini electric set just for you. It's the best VIP in the business and one of the best rock and roll shows you can ever see. Go to FozzyRock.com and come rock out with us. Judas went gold, 500,000 units sold. I Still Burn, the number one most added song on rock radio and our seventh consecutive top 30 hit. Come be a part of the party. Come be a part of the party. Come be a part of the party. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And stick right here for the Nitro Classic Album Clash featuring the boys from Pod of Thunder, Andy, Nick, and the mysterious Chris L. The Classic Album Clash returns right here, right now. OFR versus Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. I barely said that with a straight face. Here we go. All right, so it's time for another amazing edition of the Classic Album Clash here on Talk is Jericho. And joining us for the third time are the Boys of Thunder from the Pod of Thunder, America's little brother Andy, Nick Polak, and the mysterious and ever erotic Chris L. And we are, usually I'm guesting on your guys' show, but this is, like I said, the third time you guys have done this one. And we are doing Nitro. Now, I'll just do a quick intro. People might be going, who is this Nitro? We've never heard of Nitro. Well, that's the idea. You shouldn't have probably heard of Nitro. But we did also do, for you guys, the three cats, the three rock and roll boners, we've done a Baron Cross
classic album Clash, which is a Christian metal band from the 80s that's probably about as obscure as Nitro. So I think all of the talk is Jericho fanatics will stick with us here. Now, Andy, if you want to kick this off, how did we end up coming to this point of this Nitro classic album Clash? Because I will say this, Nitro is the best worst band ever, or the worst best band ever, depending on how you want to put it.
Kind of both at the same time. Depending on which song and which aspect of, whether it's a visual or performance or whatever it is. But yeah, you're right. But why we're here is because on our show, Pot of Thunder, we did an episode about one of the songs on Nitro's second album, Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat.
Yes.
Donnie Died on Christmas.
Well, we also, though, this all kind of started beforehand when we did Cat Scratch Fever from the aforementioned Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat album.
That's right. That was probably a year and a half before the Johnny Died on Christmas episode, so you're right. But that's maybe that's what started it. We've been talking about Nitro ever since in our group texts and when we get together. But then I think it really kicked into high gear with Johnny Died on Christmas, because I don't think I've listened to another band on my phone since we recorded that episode. That's all I've been talking about, and I don't know what got into your head to...
When we started with the Cat Scratch Fever a couple years ago, and this was during the lockdown when I probably was here in Jacksonville, or maybe I was at home, but I would connect with you guys as much as possible because all of us were bored as shit, just trying to find something to do. So you'd pick random songs now on Pot of Thunder, and the gimmick of the show, for those of you just hearing about this for the first time, is they pick a song, we pick a song, and for the next hour... debate that song. And you think, how the hell can you talk for an hour about a song? Well, it's very easy, because you stop and start and get really into the minutia. So we were laughing our asses off at Nitro, the concept of Nitro, which is the highest singer of all time in Jim Gillette and the fastest guitar player of all time in Michelangelo Baccio.
Two guys who had instructional videos before they had bands.
Correct. Yeah. Like back in the day, for those of you guys that are probably 40s or older, you could buy a magazine like Circus, and in the back they would have all the classified ads, and you could get the Jim Gillette vocal method and the Michelangelo guitar speed.
Speed kills.
And then the other one was Billy Sheehan bass tactics or whatever.
They were available as a 2-pack. Also, I think you got a discount if you got speed. They really were. Speed kills and vocal power together. And it was packaged together as, well, if you're a guitar player, you need to learn how to sing backup. So buy both.
Right. So we kind of came obsessed with this Nitro. And then when Nick actually brought up, let's do Johnny Died at Christmas, which we've all agreed is possibly the worst song of all time. But we'll get Nick and Chris involved quickly here. But the reason why this popped in my head to do a Nitro classic album clash is because you said you hadn't stopped listening to Nitro and done a whole deep dive, where I thought we could be the only four people in the world that are discussing Nitro right now, and probably are, for good and bad reasons.
There could be members of Nitro hanging out right now and they're not discussing Nitro.
So, Nick, what was your thoughts about the initial Nitro salvo? And did you listen to Nitro prior to Pot of Thunder? Did you know anything about this band?
No, actually. This was a band that flew under my radar. In our discussions that we've had over the last 8 years on Pot of Thunder, a lot of the ridiculous has come up. So we had a few listeners who had sent us, you know, private messages or Facebook posting, well, you know Nitro, right? And you know this song and this song. And it's like, no, I don't know this. And then I heard it, and I wasn't sure what to make of it. Now I've been forced to do the deep dive into both albums.
Well, and just so you know, Pot of Thunder once again started as a Kiss exclusive podcast where they went through every single Kiss song. And the ones that always got Chris L's proverbial goat were the Mark St. John tunes, because Chris does not suffer quick guitar players lightly. Always hated the Mark St. John solos. What were your initial thoughts on Nitro, Chris? And did you know anything about this band prior to Cat Scratch Fever and Johnny Died at Christmas and now both records?
Living in Chicago since 91, Michelangelo Baccio is a known commodity here in town.
Okay.
Local guy, I guess. And my first job when I moved here was at Guitar Center. So I'm pretty sure we had all the instructional videos going on a loop behind the accessories counter, and I'm sure Batty-O's was in the mix. And you know, you walk by and you glance at the TV screen, and you see the bad wig, and you see the double neck guitar shooting off into the two different directions, and you know, he's got the guitar faces that are a combo of orgasm and defecation, and you know, it's just like that whole visual, the whole shtick of it, and just the whole notion of just try and play as fast as you possibly can is just not something that appeals to me from a musical standpoint. So I was aware of him, probably knew he was in the band called Nitro, but I hadn't heard a thing from them until we started discussing the Cat Scratch Fever cover. Fast forward to today, I've listened to both albums all the way through and ready to discuss them here on your show.
I was doing some reading. I was trying to do a deep dive of my own. I didn't get as far as Andy did. You can kind of tell us as we go through this, Andy, some of the things you've discovered. But somebody wrote a great comment about Batty-O, was that he has complete control and mastery of his instrument, but yet he still totally sucks.
That's pretty accurate, I would say.
I think Chris L. wrote that comment, maybe. Check the username.
That's pretty accurate. You know, sums up my feelings almost 100% equally.
Now, Andy, were you familiar with Nitro at all prior to our Pod of Thunder experience?
No, that's how they were introduced to me. And then really when I started examining Nitro more was when Nick found the video for Cat Scratch Fever. And the pretend drummer, Marcus Mueller, who we'll get into later, headbutts the cymbal at the beginning. And Nick said, you have to watch this video. And then ever since then,
yeah, it was I've been interested. After that.
Yeah.
I have a long and storied career with Nitro. And it goes back to the early 90s when I was still living in Calgary prior to moving to Tennessee for my first kind of real excursion outside of Canada working for Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So what I used to do was I used to go to the flea market in the early 90s, or as my friend and I called it, the fly market, because the fly girls and Living Color were hot at the time, which tells you what year it was.
And I'd go there hot fly girls at the flea market?
No, but we just called it the fly market for whatever reason, right? And so I used to go buy secondhand tapes, and for some reason, maybe I read something about Nitro, or maybe I was just curious. But I bought the cassette for OFR, which is one of the two albums that we're discussing. The other one being HWDWS, Hot Wet Dripping With Sweat. OFR is outrageous. So I bought that, and I put it into, back in the day, you would carry a box of cassettes with you in your car. There was no iPod or phone. You would have to choose the 20 or 30 cassettes, whatever fit into your cassette carrier, and listen to that. So I was at my girlfriend's house, came out one morning, and my car had been broken into and my cassettes were gone. So I got some insurance money, believe it or not, and I went back to the flea market to try and buy some cheap tapes. I realized that all of my tapes had been stolen and then sold to the flea market. And one of the reasons why is because Outrageous was there, along with about 15 other ones like this, where I was like, okay, I know maybe somebody else brought in, you know, freaking Girls, 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 or Ride the Lightning, but nobody brought in Outrageous.
No, yeah. They didn't.
Not, you know, so quickly, no. Again.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there was another, like, a Cinderella Long Cold Winter that I had Tom Kiefer autograph. And so I knew, like, this is my cassette. But the big evidence was that Outrageous was there.
Yeah, that's the dead giveaway there.
So then prior to going down to Tennessee, I went to another secondhand, like, video store and looked through the CD racks and saw Hot Wet Dripping With Sweat was there. So I bought Hot Wet Dripping With Sweat along with a couple other albums. Mr. Big was one of them. And those were the CDs that I listened to driving from Calgary to Tennessee. So I have listened to these albums many times over the last 25 years, maybe not so much over the last 20, but for a 3-4 year period, I was very, very familiar with both these records.
So you got OFR, but you were into it enough to buy the second one, because I could see that turning some people off where they would be like, ah, this is too much. I'm not buying another Nitro album.
Well, the reason why, though, is I remember taking out King Rageous back to Winnipeg for Christmas Vacation, for example, saying, guys, I have the funniest band you've ever heard in your life. You have never heard anything like this. And I specifically remember putting on one of the songs that we'll come up with. I should probably save it. There's one of the songs that has a 35-second scream. And we used to play this game, like, find the craziest scream you can find on any album. And I was like, I got the best one. You guys can't beat me on this. Putting it on and everyone just laughing. So that's kind of why it became a thing for me.
That makes perfect sense.
We've got a lot to discuss as we go into these albums, because I want to hear a lot of your deep dive, Andy, and some of the things you've discovered, because you've found live shows and you've found interviews and you've found some of the vocal power technique and all this sort of thing. So before we actually get into the album covers and all the stuff that we usually do, do you have any final comments on some of the things that you've found and learned, Andy, that you might want to say now?
I'll say this up front. I kind of did a 180 on Nitro, maybe not a full 180, but in the last 2 weeks, it's because listening to Nitro, I'm focusing more on Jim Gillette than I am on Michael.
Yes.
I'm not a guitar player. I get what he's doing is incredibly difficult, but I'm focusing more on Jim Gillette when I'm listening. I think he has to be the most technically gifted singer in the hair metal genre. What he did with it, we'll get into, and that's questionable. You listen to it and you start laughing and you think, this is so weird. Why does it sound so weird? It's because every song has these multiple part harmonies. For every part, the pre-chorus, the verse, even when he's just screaming like, yeah, or what, you know, that he's doing like four tracks
at
different pitches. That has to be extremely difficult and laborious to do. So when I was listening to that, I was thinking, should he not have gone into this type of music? Is there a different genre that he would have excelled at? But this was popular at the time, so he's like, I'm going to try this. And it just didn't. It didn't compute with what he was physically capable of and trying to do. I think he needed to dumb it down more to be more successful than he was.
What do you think of Gillette's vocals, Nick?
I guess we'll get more into it, but I find it quite often unintelligible. I can't tell what he's saying almost all the time. Again, like what Andy said, it very impressive. I mean, and watching some interviews kind of training up for this episode, I came to respect his dedication to it. He really seems like he is 100% dedicated to keeping the voice going, to working on it, strengthening it. I mean, he's talking about which muscles are need to be strengthened in order to do this. And I mean, he's getting scientific about which exact frequency to the thousandth place that you need to break the glass. I was impressed with all that. Listening to it, it just sounds like some crazy guy, but there's definitely a method there. So he's a very interesting guy.
Another great quote that I read was, he is half Vince Neil and half Elmo from Sesame Street. Chris, do you agree with what Andy's saying that, you know, we're taking the piss out of this, but the thing about this band is once again, they play it totally straight. This is not a gag to them. They're very serious about it. And Gillette does have, I would never compare Jim Gillette to Freddie Mercury, but the concept is the same, where the stacked vocals are really incredible throughout a lot of the songs.
Yeah, as we get into the album comparison, I think some of my opinions will surprise people based on my previous Nitro opinions, because I actually have some pretty extensive notes here.
Nice.
These being the first time I listened to the albums, I wanted to make sure I had my recollections written down, because I certainly wasn't prepared to listen to them multiple times today. So I wanted to make sure I had my thoughts down on paper so I could remember them for this show. So,
well, we'll get started. So the two albums in question is OFR, which of course stands for Outrageous, came out May 30th, 1989. on the Rampage label, produced by Gillette, Michelangelo Battio, and Charlie Watts, who I'm assuming is not the Charlie Watts of the Rolling Stones.
That's where you're wrong. I think that the Steel Wheels tour was delayed because Charlie said, Mick and Keith, I've got Jim and Michelangelo on the line. Bugger off. I'll get back to you when I'm done with this.
Yeah. Yes, and this also features the rhythm section of TJ Racer on bass and Bobby Rock on the drums, which is one of the other reasons why I bought it, because I was a big Bobby Rock fan from the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. And then I think at the time I bought this, he was in the Nelson Band. And the funny thing is, which we'll get into, there are a lot of comparisons here between Nitro and the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. And I'll leave it at that for right now. And the other album is Nitro 2, official name, HWDWS, Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. So they're very much in the Sabbath Aussie mode where they like their acronyms. This came out almost 3 years later, March 21st, 1992, also on Rampage, also produced by Jim Gillette. And the rhythm section has been replaced by Ralph Carter and Johnny Thunder on the drums, who I don't think actually exists because I don't think there's an actual drummer on this album.
I know, but that's kind of venturing into Charlie Watts territory where, you know, invoking the name of a member of the New York Dolls just pass off his last name. It's like this kind of game playing, invoking rock icons, insinuating that they would be involved with Nitro is a pretty audacious move on their part.
Very much so. And when the tour started, Johnny Thunders was gone, replaced by KC Comet. And of course, in the video with Marcus Mueller, who we should do a full podcast on. Just a quick note about the covers. If you guys noticed that they're the exact same cover, just it different is. Colors.
Yeah, so which color background? What do you like, red or green? That's how you pick which color, which cover is better.
Well, the background on OFR has got a little more artistic detail than just a different color. There's
there's like a skull.
There's some stuff going on there, but the second album is just simply swapped out the background for a solid neon green color and putting a 2 at the bottom.
I like Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat better for that reason. Oh, yeah, I didn't waste any time on the album cover.
Just the lack of we don't need to worry about it. We'll just stick the logo on a puke green background and call it a day.
Yep. Yeah. I was eating a fruit-flavored candy cane while listening to OFR, and my wife walked by and she said, that's the exact same color as the album.
I just love the fact you're eating a fruit-flavored candy cane.
No, listening to Nitro makes a man do strange things.
Yes, it does.
Just because we always do this, so Andy likes Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat better. I will go with Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat better because it pops a little bit better with the green. Plus, there is no other band that has this puke green, pea green color on an album, so it's very easy to find it when you're looking for it in the mix of a bunch of other CDs.
Which a lot of people do, I'm sure, on the regular.
Chris, what's your favorite of the two covers?
I got to go with OFR just because there seem to be a little more effort put into it. I am a fan of the neon lime green, but I got to nod to the little bit of extra effort that went into the OFR album creation.
Nick?
Yeah, OFR. Plus, it reminds me of fruit-flavored candy canes. Well, now. Yeah.
How could you not take that? Exactly.
That green is. Yes, I'm sorry.
Another thing, too, we want to point out about the band, and you'll see this when I post pictures of them, as extreme and over-the-top as the guitar playing and singing are, it's the same for the image and the look. Gillette's hair is got it. It looks like a giant dandelion. It is out there, man. It is long and it's poofed out to the max.
Yep. It has to be the biggest hair ever, which is in the beginning of the Freight Train video, which we'll get into. But if you want to see the biggest hair in hair metal, that's got to be it.
That's it. Yeah. They were going over the top for everything. So we're going to mess with the order of the set lists a bit, the track lists. And if there's any diehard Nitro fans that have a problem with it, God bless you, man, because there's a lot worse things in the world to be worried about than this at the point in time. So we're going to start off, though, with it's Freight Train versus I Want You, and that's spelt with a U a la Prince. And there's a lot of this weird spelling going on the Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat album. So, Andy, you've been going on the deep dive. You want to start with the track-by-track debate here?
Freight Train, hands down. Freight Train is the template for Nitro. If you are going to play one song for someone by Nitro, it's going to be Freight Train. You're going to show them the video. It all comes together. There's the double neck guitar. Actually, it's the four neck guitar, the quad in that video during the solo. God. So he's playing with his hands, with his fingers down and then up and down.
I hate that. Let's just explain to you, this is not a four neck guitar like Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. This is a four neck where, like Andy says, it's like a four pointed star. There's a neck going to the left, to the right, and to the lower left and the lower right. It's basically impossible to play.
So he's finger tapping with both hands in the traditional sense, if you can even say that. Then he flips it over and does it with his hands down. Quick note, in one of the videos I saw, an interview on Headbangers Ball with Adam Curry, Michelangelo Baddio says that guitar was stolen while they were on tour.
Oh, no. The four prong was stolen.
How big must the vehicle have had to be?
Pack it in.
Would you have to roll up a backhoe to steal that thing?
That's one of those things. Like, it's like stealing a 59 Les Paul. Like, where are you going to sell it? As soon as you sell it, someone's going to know whose it is.
Market somewhere in Tennessee.
No, it was in Calgary. The flea market was in Calgary.
Wherever. And it'll be like, okay, that's mine. That's my stolen guitar. I'm just going to buy it back. Prove
it's yours.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Identify the guitar. Can you describe the guitar?
He could say, didn't you see the Freight Train video? No, I didn't see it.
Did anyone? All right. So you're going with Freight Train, Andy?
Yeah, that's the one. Like I said, everything that is Nitro is in that song and that video if you need a good sample to see if you're into this.
Chris?
These being the opening tracks of the album, I just want to do a quick production comparison.
Right.
OFR, I couldn't decide if I liked the rather wimpy, anemic sort of bass sound and low-end sound. I couldn't decide if I didn't like that or it added a little much-needed clarity to all the chaos that was going on in the rest of stuff. The Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat, Nitro 2 definitely has a fuller sound, which I tend to find a little more pleasing to the ear. So I don't know. I was struck these being the opening tracks of the sort of slight difference there in production.
Yeah, big time.
I voted I Want You mainly because I thought the lead breaks and the guitar solo were better. They were a little more musical. The solo in Freight Train is definitely of the, you know, Vinnie Vincent, Mark St. John, just completely non-musical. Just as our buddy Paul Stanley once said about Mark St. John, just puking notes out as fast as possible. And, you know, I thought the solo was better in I Want You. Another few of my observations that I'll sprinkle in are some of the comparisons to other bands that sort of registered with me as I was listening to it. And I Want You had kind of a Dokken vibe to me, like from the Under Lock and Key era, both the riff and occasionally Gillette's vocals remind me of Don Dokken's a little bit. And then, of course, the lyrical nod to I Want You to Want Me, Cheap Trick, is invoked there. So for those reasons, the tip of the cap for me goes to I Want You.
Nick?
It was actually pretty easy for me. I like Freight Train to an extent. I get that it's sort of like the flagship song. It's kind of, I mean, it's opening track, opening album. It's like, hey, this is what you're getting. Like, this is the band.
Right. Yeah.
This is how it's going to be. Again, I found the vocals to be largely unintelligible in this song.
Yeah.
I had no idea what he was saying. Somebody brought up, I think Chris J brought up Freddie Mercury with the layering of vocals.
Right.
There was always, maybe it's just because, you know, recorded in better studio, whatever, technical reasons, but there was always intelligibility there. You can always tell what Freddie was saying, even if there were eight of them. Not the case with Jim Gillette on these albums when he does that. It was pretty easy, though, for me to go with I Want You. Sorry, Andy. this is my favorite song on both either album.
Wow. Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. I've listened to it about a dozen times since last night.
All right.
I really like it. It's got a Rat sort of a feel to it. And like a lot of swagger, that kind of laid back 80s rat swagger. It has probably my favorite vocal moment on either album, which is just the little moment before the pre-chorus, the steal your heart away, right before they go into the, I want. Just the, it's like really, really high. The steal your heart away.
Yeah.
Like that one. I really like it. Yeah, it just, it was like a super catchy moment. Like it yeah. hooked me right there. So pretty easy for me. I get it that it's not filled with the Nitro gimmick, but I thought it was a way better song.
I find the same thing, and I'm going with I Want You as well, because I find as outrageous as the first record is, the second one is catchier. There's a stretch in the middle that gets a little bit dour, shall we say, but I like I Want You. I like the sound effect on the snare drum. I want you. I remember when I first heard it, I didn't like it much at all. But I really did get into it over the years of listening to Nitro a lot. And Freight Train to me never really grabbed me. And that's why I'm excited to do it at some point on Pod of Thunder, because there is a video. To me, that's one of the weaker songs on OFR. But it is so signature as to what you're going to get with Nitro for sure. All right, we move on to Double Trouble versus Cat Scratch Fever. And I'll kick it off here. Much like Nick talked about I Want You being your favorite from both albums, Double Trouble is top two or three for me on both albums. And it's another one that I played for my friends when I went back to Winnipeg for vacations in between or whatever. Listening to that chorus is so great. It's super catchy and it's hilarious. And because he goes like, because you know you're in trouble. And then it's he went, Double Trouble! Like super high, crazy, crazy chorus. Super catchy. So I'm really going with Double Trouble. And Cat Scratch Fever, I mean, you really can't go wrong with that. But still, it's Cat Scratch Fever. We've heard it plenty of times before. So not exactly the most original of covers. Chris, what is your favorite between Cat Scratch Fever and Double Trouble?
I'm going to disagree with you at one point. It turns out you can go wrong with Cat Scratch Fever. They just they stripped all the swagger and all the the sleaze out of it in favor of just their you know histrionics and stuff. The double bass stuff during the chorus, I thought I'm talking drums.
Yeah.
Just interrupted any kind of groove that the song needs, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Props to the vocal intro is brilliant, but and brilliant.
I forgot. I forgot that that was repeated in the song. Yeah, I knew it was in the beginning, but during the chorus, I heard it in there a couple of times. So that made me laugh.
He's got a real habit of going like, oh, like he does it quite a, oh, like a really weird low note there.
Well, he's going as low as he can as well as high as he can in the same song. So it sounds weird when you go to that extreme of your voice.
So, and then in my notes for both of these songs, both have written down under them terrible solo in terms of just being, you know, a puking of notes, not very music. But Double Trouble had a really good riff to start the song off and carries it through, which the thing about Batio as I was listening to these albums is, you know, obviously people pay attention to his lead playing because that's his thing, to be the fastest gunslinger out there. But the guy could play rhythm guitar and came up with some pretty good riffs on these albums. And, you know, I think that's the most important thing. And he did a good job on those. And Double Trouble is one of those songs. And a nice breakdown in the middle. I'm going Double Trouble.
Yeah, I agree with you just quickly. There is a lot of good hooks on this. It's just, once again, you got to get through the over-the-top vocal and of course, the guitar playing. But they did write some good hooks, and the riffs and the chorus hooks are good in a few of these instances. Andy, what do you like between the two?
Well, I have thoughts on both. I'll start with Double Trouble. I think Double Trouble is a good, like an air humping strut metal kind of song, kind of
strut metal.
Until that bridge where Jim Gillette turns into Jim Gibb and hits those Bee Gees notes for some reason, and he's singing about blackened skies filling a woman's heart. Like, it doesn't make sense anymore. But my pick is Cat Scratch Fever. Obviously, it's a cover. We know that. But the Nitroisms are plentiful. The Oh Yeah that Chris did perfectly is something I say at a lower volume every time that food is served to me.
Every time what? The food what?
Every time anybody serves food to me, I say that to myself as it's presented on the table.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought you were saying that's what you say at the beginning of every episode of Pot of Thunder.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that too. Yeah. But yeah, the other note I was thinking, I normally cringe when there's sexual moaning in a song. But I actually applaud it in this song when Jim Gillette harmonizes with his own moaning. Never heard that before. Harmonized moaning. I'm giving it to Cat Scratch Fever. And of course, you have to talk about the video with Marcus Mueller, the quote-unquote drummer who is definitely not playing on the album, who's the drummer in the video.
Yeah.
Gigantic muscle guy, headbutts the crash cymbal at the beginning of the song.
That's the most rock and roll moment I can think of.
Yeah. Well, once again, though, it kind of harkens back to Bobby Rock, the former Nitro drummer, smashing the cymbals with his hands at the end of the Boys Are Gonna Rock video. Once again, bringing up more comparisons between the VVI and Nitro. Nick, what are your faves?
I'm going Double Trouble. And you mentioned before the similarities to Vinnie Vincent Invasion. This is where it starts, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This song really sounds like a Vinnie Vincent Invasion song. It's got the really layered vocals during the chorus. Remind me of like, Do You Want to Make Love?
Right.
It's got that sort of double time hi-hat thing going on after the chorus. And that reminds me of Baby O. So, and I just think like the song itself, the riff in the beginning, maybe could be a Vinnie Vincent riff. Not exactly, but I think like the melody, the structure of the song, it sounds like a Robert Fleischman era Vinnie Vincent Invasion song. And I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. Cat Scratch Fever is all I have for my notes here. It says ridiculous, but enjoyable. And I think that that's as good as I can sum it up. The video is really adds to it, though.
Yeah.
You can't. It's harder to
dismiss
it.
Running in place scene with Gillette at the beginning is key
and
as well.
Batio is like on a lifeguard tower for some reason.
Yeah. It's almost like Batio and Gillette were fans of the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. Because if you remember, the whole concept of the VVI was they wanted to be the most extreme. Guitar solos, super fast, singing was going to be super high, and the image was going to be the most glam it could be, which it was in 1986. Fast forward to 1989, it's almost like these two guys went, okay, we're going to take what Vinnie Vincent and Fleischman / Slaughter did and up the ante even more so with our image, our solos, and our vocal technique, shall we say.
Agreed.
Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of a flip-flop. We'll do the rockers again next. We'll flip-flop the ballads. We have ballad versus ballad. So basically, we got Machine Gun Eddie versus Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. And I will say this. So I was listening to this today, once again, prepping up to hear the music. And I was giving my daughters a ride to their orthodontist appointment, listen to this. And they both were like, Dad, what are you listening to? This is terrible. So I turned it off, and then I went home, and I was in the shower listening to Machine Gun Eddie, and I got the following message from my wife via text. And see if you guys can hear this.
Please make that horrible music stop before my ears start bleeding. It's horrible.
Wow. So that pretty much, so you can't listen to Nitro around your family, basically, is what you're saying.
No. I was fortunate to be completely alone today. You know, it worked out for me in that regard, and also my wife didn't have to be subjected to it.
I had a similar experience that I'll mention two songs from now.
All right, Chris, why don't you start? Machine Gun Eddie versus the title track of Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat.
So this is a close one for me. The Machine Gun Eddie riff I got down here in my notes kind of reminded me a little bit, dare I say, of Anthrax, sort of, yeah, in that wheelhouse to me. It just registered with me as a comparable. I thought the lead line and that down tempo part was interesting. It almost sounded like a keyboard to me, but it was it was melodic and good, so I enjoyed that. The vocal histrionics are just beyond ridiculous. I mean, no surprise there. And then in the chorus, you got Batio sort of interjecting his Yngwie-isms in between, you know, the vocal lines or the call and response. You get the, you know, classical Yngwie bursts of stuff happening there, which found mildly interesting. But so then we go over to the title cut, Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. This one gets the nod for me, if for no other reason than the quasi-explosion that happens when the guitar is kicking. I had to rewind that a few times to decide if it was an actual explosion or that's just how it came out when all the instruments kicked in. It rivals the explosion at the beginning of the live version of what, Kickstart My Heart, yeah. Motley Crue, that we kick around.
Yep.
As far as best explosions at the beginning of a hair metal song.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I thought the riff was good, and just the, again, the chorus with the vocal is simply hilarious, but the explosion tips it for me in the favor of Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat.
All right, what do you think, Andy?
I think Nick said something about this earlier. It's kind of an ugly battle here between these two. It's not for those with weak stomachs if you're going to listen to these two back-to-back, but Machine Gun Eddie, I read the lyrics because you could not understand them.
Right.
It's like something about like this guy who's like a horror movie villain, because they mention Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, and that Machine Gun Eddie's even worse or whatever. I think the music kind of fit that vibe pretty well, that slow, haunting thing with the sustained lead notes that Chris was talking about. Then the 30-second scream that Jim Gillette does. But then for some unknown reason, the tempo of the song quadruples. And then then Jim sings the lyrics like Boomhauer from King of the Hill. From like the very top high metal scream to... I don't, it's such an odd choice to go from that to that. Maybe it's just the only thing you could do after nailing a scream like that. Like, we have to give me a break, so I have to just mumble something low for a minute.
Did Nitro ever play live? Like, you sent us a little clip. Like, did they actually do shows?
They did, and they had all the layered vocals tracked.
Gotcha.
He's singing like one lead, and what he's doing live is perfect. Because I was wondering, how could they pull this off? It's not going to work. Because all those voices have to be there, or it's not Nitro.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like Def Leppard with all the guitars that they have stacked from Hysteria and Pyromania, etc. And that's why I laugh when people talk about too many tapes in music today. Tapes, tapes, tapes. Dude, there was tapes in the 70s when Queen did Bohemian Rhapsody. So get your head out of your ass and realize it's part of live rock and roll if you want the songs to sound as full. So it doesn't surprise me that Jim was using tapes, because there's no way they could duplicate the songs. It would sound so thin without them.
Yeah, that's my pick. Machine Gun Eddie.
I'm going to go with Machine Gun Eddie as well, for the reasons basically that Andy said. The 35-second scream brought many a laughs to us, but also, too, trying to duplicate it, it's not easy to do. The guitar solo is ridiculous. It's one of the, quote-unquote, best Batio fast, just puking note solos. He actually has a little bit of a theme to it. Lyrically, I mean, you can't beat words like Kruger seems like romper room, and Elm Street ain't so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a point there.
Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. I love it. Starts super fast. And then the verse is like, bam, da, 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 bam, bam, bam. And then he does a little thing. I'm a six machine.
That's a toss up, bro.
It's a toss up. You know, in Nitro World, if Eddie's a 9, Hot, Wet is an 8.5. But I got to give the advantage to Machine Gun Eddie. All right, Nick.
So these two songs going head to head, it's kind of like watching Hagler and Hearns in 85.
Kind of, yeah. Very good analogy.
It's just absolute mayhem between the two.
Great call.
And just blood and guts, basically. Who's going to win? I'm going with Machine Gun Eddie.
Wow. Okay.
I found it to be a little more catchy, a little more interesting. I mean, yeah, I think... Catchy. Between these two songs, it's hard to say one is. Chris L. said that the riff was reminiscent of Anthrax at the beginning and at the outro. I think it's exactly, this is like an Anthrax riff. I mean, it's not one that exists, but it would be.
Yeah.
Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat is absolute mayhem from beginning to end. And one thing that kind of struck me as I was listening to it, when it gets to the chorus, the cadence of the gang vocals is kind of like a sideline cheer, like a middle school.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah.
Like you could hear girls on the playground like clapping and saying, you know, something to that cadence.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hot, wet, drip with sweat. Hot, wet, drip with
like
sweat.
Like Shimmy yeah. Cocoa Pop or something.
So you're going with Machine Gun Eddie.
Okay. Yeah, it was close too. Who was going to fall first and Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat fell first.
All right, let me move on to the battle of the ballads, shall we say, although Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat has two of them, but Crazy Love, written by Gillette Batio and Howie Huberman. There's a name for you. Crazy Love versus Long Way From Home, which also had a video on it. And when I was growing up, we did not have Headbangers Ball. We had Much Music, and it was the Pepsi Power Hour. And we used to watch that. It's also, too, interesting, and I'll start, is that the video for Long Way From Home, the hairspray is down. And as we talked about, we haven't done this on Pod of Thunder yet, but the video has some famous people in it, including Rosemary of, was that the Dick Van Dyke Show in 1962 or something like that? And who's the other guy that was in it?
Maury Amsterdam. It's half of the cast of the Dick Van Dyke Show is reunited in this Nitro video.
And also Julie McCullough, who was Kirk Cameron's girlfriend on Growing Pains, ended up in Playboy and is now a stand-up comedian. She is also in it very randomly. And Jim looks good. He's a good-looking guy, long blonde hair, big package.
Yeah, huge package.
Did you see the Vocal Power video?
Yeah, that's
huge. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very, very huge. So anyways, song-wise, though, Long Way From Home to me is the song that could have been a Motley Crue, Dokken-type song, kind of a power ballad that's actually fairly good. The guitar solo gets a little bit crazy, but I think if they would have had a little bit more money, they could have probably pushed that a little bit higher. When you look at, you know, Faster Pussycat and Great White and these type of kind of mid-level mediocre bands having hits with songs that weren't as good as this one. Crazy Love, Just a Couple of Kids being the tag of the chorus bothers me. I don't like it. However, the solo in Crazy Love might be Batio's best solo out of both these records, because it's the one time he doesn't succumb to his urge to just start note puking, which is the theme of the show. So I like Crazy Love, the solo, but the song Long Way From Home gets the Duke for me. What do you think, Nick?
I also made a note that Crazy Love had a very good and appropriate solo. Not exactly characteristic of the rest of the album. Crazy Love also reminded me of, I think it'd be... because this is on the second album, so this would have been after the first Enough's Enough album. It really sounds to me like... vocal delivery, especially. And that being said, however, I am going to give this one to Long Way From Home. The acoustic intro I thought was pretty interesting. It was slightly Zeppelin-y and Diary of a Madman-y.
Yeah, good call.
This is going to be kind of an ongoing theme with me. I made a lot of notes like this song sounds like it could have been by this band, you know,
right.
Enough's Enough thing. This one sounds like it could have been a Slaughter song, like a Flight of the Angels, something like that. Pretty good song, actually. And the video, you know, helps. It's funny. The videos help.
Yeah.
They don't really exist anymore. But back then, the videos could really make an impression and make you like the song more, make you appreciate it more. And that happened with this. So yeah, I'm going to give it to Long Way From Home.
I like the outro too. Coming home, cause I'm coming home, baby. That was good too. Andy, what do you think between the two?
I'm giving it to Crazy Love. I think that these might be the best two Nitro songs on paper, but they're not the two best songs for Nitro.
Hmm.
If you gave these songs to another contemporary band at the time, maybe one of these two could have been a hit or a moderate hit for someone. So I think these two are the most well-written, easily digested songs if the Nitro-isms weren't in there. That makes sense. But one thing I really wanted to point out was lyrically in Crazy Love, I'm not trying to make light of any kind of domestic violent situation, but I laughed out loud at the line, hugging turned into slugging. They're talking about their relationship and how it's going south, and hugging turned into slugging.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, how many more gems of these would be unearthed if you could actually understand what he's saying?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you're going with Crazy Love.
Yeah, and you know, one more thing. You mentioned that the hair was down in the video for Long Way From Home. From what I saw, their promo photos with the crazy hair.
Right.
And Freight Train video has the crazy hair. Live and every other appearance, they kind of look like, I'm not saying the same coolness factor or whatever, but they're like, they would fit in like a Guns N' Roses vibe.
Well, much like Axl had his hair done up for the Welcome to the Jungle video. Yeah, and
same
couple promo photos, yeah.
Yeah, but they're, you know, like sleeveless tees, tattoos, down long hair.
What do you think, Chris, between Crazy Love and Long Way From Home?
So I just want to clarify for everyone out there that Long Way From Home is on OFR. Crazy Love is on
Nitro. Thank you.
2. I don't want to – I'm tired of reciting those initials, so say Nitro 2. My notes on Crazy Love are worst lyrics of any song on both albums, my estimation. Laughed out loud at the high vocals before the solo. But again, I thought the solo was very good. The melody of the song and the chorus was pretty good. Over to Long Way From Home, the Babies vocal, his saying of baby repeatedly in the during the intro had me rolling. Again, the solo, I thought that like the first and third parts of it were pretty good, but then it got kind of crazy in the other parts, and you know, it dropped in those requisite neoclassical sort of Yngwie runs. So this was a close one, but given the fact that, in my estimation, Crazy Love has the worst Nitro
lyrics,
period. I'm going with Long Way From Home.
That's saying a lot, like we said.
It is.
All right, now we get back into the order. Bring It Down versus Boys Will Be Boys, and that's Boys Will Be Boys with a Z, as in boys are going to rock, and that's a will be with the letter B, as in be real. So, Chris, why don't you do a double whammy here and tell us what you think between Bring It Down and Boys Will Be Boys.
Okay, so Bring It Down, again, another good riff. I will say this exercise gave me a new appreciation for Badio's rhythm playing, composition of main riffs and songs. And also the guitar tone sort of reminded me of Akira and Loudness, bands
that we've
discussed before, you know, has that sort of super saturated sort of West Coast Sunset Strip metal kind of sound, which when executed well is quite potent. And you hear that a lot on both these albums. So again, I simply started laughing when the vocals kicked in. When this guy enters a song, more often than not, I just start laughing. And I mean, that might be a good thing from an entertainment standpoint, but at the end of the day, I'm laughing at the ridiculousness of it.
Exactly.
As you pointed out earlier, they don't seem to be in on the joke.
Right.
Dead serious about what they're doing, which it makes it all the more ridiculous. And then I thought he had the harmonized guitar solo was pretty interesting. It was kind of cool, different for these guys. Boys Will Be Boys. This is probably the best groove of any song on either of these albums. And I also thought the solo was good. So this was a close one. But again, Boys Will Be Boys didn't have me laughing at it, and not in a good way. So I'm voting Boys Will Be Boys in this
one. Nick, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to disagree with Chris L. as far as which one had me laughing more. It was Boys Will Be Boys, simply because of the lyric. This was the lyric that I had to stop and go back. This was the only time this happened in my listening experience. Wild women going naked swimming.
The best.
That made me stop dead in my tracks and go back. Actually, I'm going to give the win to Boys Will Be Boys. It sounded like, here I go again with just straight up comparisons to other bands, but it sounded like a Crew song. It had like the girls beat, just that open hi-hat with each kick and snare hit. And the chorus was rhythmically a lot like Too Fast for Love. And Bring It Down. Now, Andy hasn't gone yet, but my note on this, I don't have that much to say about Bring It Down. I mean, it's crazy, it's heavy, but I think Andy would love this one. So we'll see if I'm right, I guess.
All right, Andy, was he right?
Well, he's right, but let me tell you this. I was listening to Bring It Down. My 5-year-old daughter walked in the room.
Oh boy, here it is.
She started laughing, and she asked me if a ghost was singing. Like, what a perfect description to it. Just laughing openly. And then,
Dad, is that a ghost singing?
I think musically the song is cool. It is ridiculous vocals the entire time. I don't think there's a single section that's not obscene.
For Bring It Down?
Yeah. Human ears and human brains are not calibrated to understand what's happening with his voice in this song. Boys Will Be Boys. I'm giving it the nod. Surprisingly, I like both, but the only reason that it put it over the top was Wild Women Going Naked Swimming. That could be one of the best lyrics ever by anyone.
Can we finish the whole verse? Wild women going naked swimming, skinny dipping, finger licking. Oh, that's living. Next to living, I like fighting. It's the best. I got to find a little lady in the north, south, east, or west.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, that song is a winner for sure.
I got to go with Boys Will Be Boys because I love the chorus. And I also, something you guys haven't discussed yet, the ending, where it just doesn't stop. Boys will be boys. Dak, 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 boys will be boys. And then it stops for like 10 seconds. And then you're like, boys will. It's like, oh, I thought I had it.
Yeah.
Great ending on that. And also, I will say this too. I haven't mentioned this yet, but Bring Down the House is a great example of Gillette's King Diamond voice. He has a lot of King Diamond in him. And I found that whole like, bring it down, bring down the house. That was real King Diamond to me because there's about 3 or 4 harmonies on that. Whereas King Diamond, you laughed at first and then realized there's a certain charm and some coolness to it. You never really get there with Gillette. It, like you said, Andy, great call. The human brain is not calibrated to understand or find what Jim Gillette is doing with his voice appealing in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. I found the coolness, though, recently.
Yeah, well. Well, your daughter wasn't wrong about it sounding like a ghost. All right, then we go to Nasty Reputation off of OFR versus Turning Me On from two. And I'll start this one. I love Turning Me On because the beginning is like, turn me on, you turn me on. And as Jim is singing, once again in the background, the gang vocals are doing this cheer, turn me on, you turn me on, and then the great chorus of turning me on and on with 18 stacked vocals, super high. So I got to go with that one. It's always been a standout for me. And Nasty Reputation, oh, good Lord, there's a lot of issues with this one for me. The chorus is way too high. I don't even know. There's another thing where someone said, Jim Gillette actually sings 2 notes at the same time. I can't believe he could do that. That's not a thing. Singing 2 notes at the same time means you're singing completely out of tune or flat. You can't do that. So I find he's singing 2 notes at the same time for a lot of Nasty Reputation, in my opinion.
Well, there are Mongolian monks who do that.
Okay, well, I guess Jim Gillette is a Mongolian monk.
I wouldn't doubt it. He's a black belt or something like that.
He's got a lot of that, too, isn't he? He's very kind of a spiritual guy. And but Nick, what do you think between these two songs?
Neither of them were really grabbing me. Andy's shaking his head. We had a conversation beforehand. I'm going to give it to Nasty Reputation, but just barely. I didn't care too much for either. I enjoyed the whisper of, she's nasty.
Yeah.
It was perhaps, and that was, I think, right before what could be considered the most ridiculous guitar solo on either album.
Wow.
Just a
Nasty Reputation.
Yeah, fast and notey, just nonstop. Turning Me On, I will say, the main riff it kicks into after that a cappella intro. It sounds like a very difficult riff to play well and have any sort of groove result from it. I don't know what he's playing. I didn't really, you know, try to figure it out, but it just sounded very difficult. So I respect that. I thought it had a terrible chorus, though.
What do you think, Chris?
Okay, the thing I found interesting about both these songs, and interesting that they're matched up together, is that they both, at least from the introduction of the vocals, they both start with the title of the song and therefore probably the chorus of the song.
Right.
It's got that kind of, you know, you give love a bad name formula, Bon Jovi, don't bore us, get to the chorus. So why not start the song with it if you're going to do it that way? So I thought, though, you know, they both sort of opened with that, which was, I found interesting. I agree with Nick on the solo and Nasty Reputation. It's just the puking notes variety. It's completely non-musical. The second solo is a little bit better, but I thought there was an interesting breakdown in Nasty Reputation. Turning Me On, I thought I had a better arrangement overall. I had that chaotic main riff, and then it goes into a breakdown of its own, and the chorus is different. My final notes on Turning Me On, it just says vocals terrible. this is another close one, but I checked Turning Me On.
All right, Andy, what do you think?
I have notes on both. Nasty Reputation is a song about a woman who comes on too strong and the guy tells her to slow down, which is basically a rewrite of Jermaine Stewart's We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off. Turning Me On is the sleeper of both of these albums. The best Nitro song is Turning Me On, in my opinion.
All right.
The a cappella panning harmonized intro, which if you don't have it on loud enough, if it's like in the background and you're not paying attention, it sounds like when you would like high speed fast forward a tape when you were you had like a double tape deck. But I'm going to go ahead and say better than In the Lap of the Gods with the the panning vocal harmony at the beginning. Awesome song. I love it. Great chorus. My favorite Nitro song is Turning Me On.
That's amazing. All right. Then we get to Fighting Mad versus Don't Go. Andy, why don't you continue?
Fighting Mad is a prime OFR Nitro. Like, it's just
vintage.
Bananas. Yeah, it is. The way he delivers that verse vocal, it's kind of like Machine Gun Eddie, but even more whatever that is, where it's this low, grumbly, gravelly voice. And I don't know. I think he just does it because he can. But it reminded me of when we used to go to the carnival as a kid and the guys who would try to like bark you over to their thing. And they, you know, these dudes are living hard and smoking and drinking.
Right.
Extremely gravelly. Kind of.
Come on over here.
Yeah.
Pop a balloon, win a prize.
Yeah, exactly. Did you look at the lyrics, anyone, for this song? Because they need to be pointed out.
No, please do. I didn't delve that far into it, but I'm realizing I missed so much great material by not pulling up the lyrics. So please regale us with this.
So the first pre-chorus, there's a lyric. It says, "My fist, hard as steel, gonna ram it through your head. Eat you like a dog. You're going to wish you were dead."
Okay. Wow.
And then, you know, the chorus and the verse. And then the next pre-chorus with the same melody says, "One thing to remember, you are but a fly. I am the swatter and you're going to die."
Wow.
And then there's a completely outlandish tempo change into the solo for that song. I thought Don't Go kind of was like the Def Leppard. It could have been a Def Leppard song, but obviously, you know, Nitro did Nitro gonna Nitro, as they say. I'm going with Fighting Mad.
All right, Chris.
Okay, so you beat me to the punch too, a couple songs ago. But Fighting Mad is the song, as I was listening to it, where I realized that he's going for King Diamond.
Yeah, right.
In a couple of these instances, and this is a song where I probably heard it on Bring It Down, the one you mentioned it and was hearing it throughout the first album. This is the one where the light switch went out. I'm like, okay, he's going for King Diamond. Another one, similar formula, The riff is good. I simply laughed at the vocals. And then the breakdown riff was cool. And then I've got written down here again. I started laughing when the solo kicked in. I can't remember if it was the solo or the vocals, possibly both. But a lot of laughter for me in the song. Don't Go, I agree, is a very strong power ballad that could have gotten them some traction. You know, a restrained solo from Batio. I think, you know, on the two ballads on Nitro 2, he did what was necessary for those things. So definitely give him credit for that. Gillette is just not a good vocalist, good enough vocalist from just a straight singing standpoint.
Yes.
Really pull off a decent power ballad. I'm going for Don't Go, and it could possibly be my favorite song on either album.
Wow. It's interesting for me because Don't Go is one of the ones that I had no idea how it went when I started listening to Two again after not hearing it for, gosh, 20-odd years. So, yeah, I kind of thought it was a little bit kind of stock. I love Fighting Mad only because going back to the, you know, look what I found to the old friends in Winnipeg. If you're trying to sing along, obviously a lot of these songs are very hard to sing along to, even for fun. But Fighting Mad, the chorus for that, you got to really go for it because it's very quick and it's just over and over again. Fighting mad because I'm fighting mad because I'm fighting mad. Fine. And of course, obviously it's three octaves higher than that. So if you got a high voice and you're ever just looking for a fun little thing to do, if you can do, I challenge anybody to try and sing the chorus for Fighting Mad and not stop because it's not easy. So Don't Go, not memorable for me. Fighting Mad, memorable only because it's really hard if you want to sing like you're on helium and your brain is going to explode like the head and Scanners, then give it a try. Nick?
I am going to slightly give it to Don't Go. I also, like Andy said, I also caught a Def Leppard sort of a vibe going on there. Fighting Mad, I didn't like it at all. I get that it's them going as over the top as possible. I did notice, though, during the verse, it sounded like perhaps a vocally a Lemmy influence was happening there, which Andy brought up a gravelly sort of a delivery, which would be consistent with that. But yeah, I'm going to give it to Don't Go. It's kind of ruined by too much vocal work, which a lot of the songs have that, but this one I think could have been a little more restrained and it could have come off a lot better. It's something where, like, what Gillette does vocally sometimes is kind of like when you worry like the wrong country has a nuke, like what are they doing with it? Are they the ones that should have this? Some of the calls being made just were unfortunate,
irresponsible behavior with his gifts and weapons.
All right, now we move on to Shot Heard Round the World versus Making Love. Andy, what do you got for those two?
I'm going with Shot Heard Round the World. It's a classic fist pumping USA patriotic anthem. One year I made the mistake of playing this song at my 4th of July barbecue.
Really?
And then when Jim started singing the verse, my backyard was besieged by all the stray dogs of the neighborhood.
Well, there's a historical reference.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is USA. Making Love, I wanted to point something out lyrically. He's basically talking about what a good lover he is, and he's like, it's directed at whatever woman he's talking to. And then he says, pick up the phone because I'm always home. And I was thinking, after everything he just said, what woman's going to be like, yeah, that sounds good. I'm going to go ahead and make love to this horny loser who's home all the time. If he's home all the time, nothing he said is true. So I'm going with Shot Heard Around the World.
Oh, my gosh. I got to go with Shot Heard Around the World as well because I like the chorus. It's quite catchy. And Making Love is another one of the ones that I was kind of – had no remembrance of how it really went. And listening back to it, it wasn't very memorable. Again, once again, talking about just the laughter of some of these tunes. I mean, the Shot Heard Around the World is fairly catchy, but that chorus, his vocals are just, you know, I remember Billy Joel talking about Sting and saying how Sting was such a great singer because he had no vibrato by choice, so it was very easy for him to lay down harmonies because everything was very straightforward. Gillette is like this as well. There is no vibrato on any Jim Gillette vocal on this record. So you could literally just go, shot heard around the world, shot heard around the world, shot heard around the world, and just stack them all on top of each other. He's probably in and out of that studio in like, you know, 20 minutes for that chorus. Also, too, the production on the drums in this, it sounds like some little kid is playing like a Hello Kitty drum set beside him. It's really pedestrian, but it just all wraps around to, once again, the kind of the crux of what Nitro is for me, which is super cheesy, super over the top, super funny, but also very catchy at times. And I find Shot Around the World has that, where Making Love, like I said, I can't even really remember the song. So I'm going with Shot Heard. What do you think, Nick?
I am going to go with Making Love on this one.
Oh, nice.
Shot Heard Around the World. It had a sort of like a Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy guitar riff pretty close to it, which was cool. The reason that it lost this battle rests solely on the pronunciation of the word world during the chorus.
Good call. That was enough
for me.
I can't even heard around the world.
The world.
Yeah.
Making Love, actually, I thought was very similar to Smooth Up In Ya by the Bullet. He's like screaming there's a sort of a screaming vocal introduction. And then it's very similar, like same beat, very similar guitar. Just thought it just cool groove. Liked it better. I don't know. Shot Heard Around the World was too much for me, especially when it got to the chorus.
Chris?
Yeah, similar takeaways for me. I thought both songs had pretty good grooves to them, so I liked that about both of them. But yeah, for Shot Heard Around the World, I have terrible vocals and awful enunciation of the song title. The way he says world, pronounces world, is just so weird and off-putting. I don't know. It just ain't right. And then my final note on that is that I just shook my head at the guitar solo. It's just like, I don't know what that was. Making Love, I thought, like I said, the groove was good. The riff was good. Solo was nice. And they had an interesting breakdown in the middle of that one. I did write down that I, again, laughed at the opening vocal. Find myself laughing at the vocal more often than not. So the nod goes for me to Making Love.
So now we get to, it's the final song on OFR. It's the title track, but we're going to do a little bit of shuffling of the songs because there's a couple extra songs on Hot, Wet, Dripping with Sweat. And once again, if there's any Nitro enthusiasts who have a problem with this, relax, because you're not going to hear Nitro being discussed to this length by anybody else at any other time. So we got OFR, the title track, versus Take Me. Andy, what do you think?
Giving it to OFR. An incredible, seriously incredible vocal in that song. Lyrically, again, you know, I had to look at the lyrics because I'm usually not a lyric guy, but when we do something like this, you have to dive in and, you know, discover all the components of what goes into these songs. But lyrically, I don't know if you guys remember this. He said, "We got the first A fucking amendment in the US fucking A. The PMRC can fuck off, baby."
Rhyming baby with A.
Yeah. Apparently it was a game time decision to see if they were going to go with John Denver or Jim Gillette for the PMRC. Who was more well-spoken.
Well, they're going to go with, it was between D. Snyder and Jim Gillette, and who had the best package in jeans.
Exactly, yes,
and D won, so he got the upper hand on that.
Their groin and Tipper Gore's face from across the room.
And then Take Me. It's a strange song lyrically. I didn't like it as much musically. Again, I'm giving the nod to OFR, but lyrically it's just kind of strange because there's the line where he says something about, tell me where we're going because you know I'll be coming in 5 seconds flat. And then he says, anywhere you want to go is good with me. So
what are you talking about? Agreeable.
Yeah, he's very agreeable, but he's coming in 5 seconds.
Right, exactly. The agreeableness is negated by the fact that he's going to have an orgasm in 5 seconds.
Yeah, which no chick wants, you know. I heard, as a matter of fact, that's why Lita Ford started beating him because of his 5-second orgasm.
That could be it. I was just thinking, like, this woman is just going to take this premature ejaculator home for the night and never come back to pick him up again. That's what she's saying.
Don't forget, that's the reason why I pick up the phone. I'm always home because of this quick ejaculation problem.
That could be it.
Oh, man. Nick, what do you think?
I'm going to have to give it to Take Me. OFR was... There are a few songs, kind of like Freight Train, kind of like Shot Heard Around the World, where it's basically saying, here we are, we're Nitro. Mm-hmm. Like, this is us. We're going to take over the world, basically. So you got three songs on the first album that have that sentiment to them. That's fine. And it sums up their musical style nicely with the over-the-top everything. But I did like Take Me. I thought that piano intro was pretty cool. I meant to look it up if that was Badio.
It's Badio. Yeah, it is.
Is that Badio? Because yeah. It's pretty great sounding. I'm not a expert, a pianist or anything like that. It sounded pretty excellent to me. And I was wondering if that was him, since it seems like he really can command whatever he puts his mind to. I thought that there was a slower pre-chorus part. I thought it sounded just like Queensryche for a few seconds. So that was kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I don't know if any of these comparisons, if obviously did they premeditate this? We want to sound like this or we want to sound like that. But it's interesting just on these two albums, how many different bands they really sound like from time to time. The verse guitar riff sounded like Young and Wasted by Kiss. So that's never a bad thing. And back to Gillette's package real quick. I was... Again, I was watching just the classic scream, the however many octave scream that everybody's seen. And I was watching that. My wife walked by and she's like, whoa, what's that guy doing? I'm like, yeah, he's screaming like that because he's got a runaway chipmunk in his jeans. Is it really a shape like that? But back to these songs, though. I think Take Me was just a better song overall. But OFR, again, it's like a flagship thing. So I'll give it that, but I just didn't stick with me quite as well.
I have to say, when Andy was pointing out Jim's package in the vocal power video with a little bit of cat like jealousy, he goes, it's obviously, look at his package, obviously stuffed. A little bit insulted by this fact.
Well, here's the thing. When you take it too far, it just becomes insulting.
It's not quite a cucumber, but it's getting there.
No, but hey, he went Nitro even with his package stuffing. He didn't make it believable.
I'll go next. OFR. I'll say this too quickly because I've said it on Pot of Thunder a couple times, but I had the fortune of playing with Michelangelo Battio at the NAMM show in 2019. Pre-pandemic, where Rudy Sarzo invited me to come for the Randy Rhoads show at NAMM, and it was me, Brian Ticci on drums, Rudy Sarzo on bass, and Michelangelo Battio on guitar playing Crazy Train. And when I went over to rock with him, he had not his four-prong guitar, but his two-prong guitar, and there was nowhere for me to rock with. I couldn't go to the right, I couldn't go to the left, because either way, I was in danger of being impaled on a guitar neck. But a nice guy, ridiculous solo, of course, didn't fit at all, but it's Michelangelo Battio, what do you expect? Having said that, Take Me has a really cool chorus. I really enjoy it. I got to go with OFR, though, just because it is outrageous. As Andy said earlier, Nitro got a Nitro, and this is a great example of that. And also, too, once again, the Vinnie Vincent comparisons to the last song on the Vinnie Vincent Invasion album called Invasion has about 3 minutes of guitar squeals where nothing's happening at the end of it. And that's similar to what happens at the end of OFR, where there's about a minute and a half of just random noises and weird stuff where it's just like they just didn't want to end the record. We're just going to keep playing. I got to go with OFR because it is very Nitro. And I always loved the lyric of we are strong, we are one with the pack, serious as a heart attack, Jack. It reminds me of 80s wrestling. Let me tell you something, Jack. Yeah. So OFR for me. Chris L.?
All right, so Take Me, I found the piano intro interesting. I thought the arrangement of the whole song is pretty ambitious. Guitar solo is cool. But OFR is just next level for me. Comparisons to a couple of my other favorite songs I heard in this one, especially at the beginning, I definitely heard the first two chords of Revelations by Maiden, which is my favorite Maiden song. And then in the chorus, it reminded me of Nothing Up My Sleeve by Motorhead. Definitely appealed to me in a big way. The rest of my notes are good riff, hilarious chorus, vocals, another stupid solo. But at the end of the day, how could you not vote for a song that has the out-fucking-rageous chant repeatedly throughout, fading in and out of the mix? Grown men barking out-fucking-rageous and putting it in a song. That's an instant winner for me.
Didn't they chant OFR during Shot Heard Round the World? Or
yeah, they did. And that's Andy, though, was saying it was USA. Was that?
You're right, it's OFR, but it is a very fist-pumping American.
Yeah.
And I wanted to point out that unlike the end of the Boys Are Gonna Rock video where they destroy all their instruments, at the end of the OFR video, Badio carefully puts that guitar in its custom case.
Yeah. Does he really? Is that a
no,
really?
Oh, okay.
No. Yeah, if you listen closely, you can hear that. Click. Ching-ching. from what I recall, too, he's got a little bit of a slur with his speech. He's like, make sure to take care of that guitar. Don't shrink it. So we'll just do a little a coda here. We've discussed Johnny Died at Christmas at length, which, of course, begat this amazing episode. But let's just do, because the two last songs we haven't talked is Johnny Died on Christmas versus Hey Mike. And I'll start. Johnny Died at Christmas is a terrible song. And Nick had a great quote on Pod of Thunder. If you guys haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, where we were talking about how bad it starts. And Nick goes, well, guys, I got to tell you, it doesn't get any better from here. You know, it's still just not a good song. But I will say this. Hey Mike has got to be the most useless guitar solo in recorded album history. And I'll tell you the reason why. This whole album is a guitar solo.
Yeah.
From song one to song done, it's nothing more than guitar solo. So when I saw Hey Mike and thought, okay, it's 50 seconds, whatever, I thought he was going to either play some piano, pull an Eddie Van Halen, do something on the acoustic guitar, maybe do some harmonics, some Cliff Burton-esque, you know, volume swells. No, he just solos. And I'm like, you just soloed for 10 songs, dude. Why did you need that extra minute of soloing? And that's why I'll choose the worst song of all time, Johnny Died at Christmas, Johnny, over Hey Mike for that specific reason. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Died at Christmas, at least there's a structure to it. And some people have opined that the chorus sticks in your head a little bit, which
yeah, like an axe.
Yeah, you know, it's a terrible song. There's no getting around it. But like you said, the Hey Mike thing, I mean, that solo could be punched into any of the songs on these albums and you would never know the difference. It's not like you could take Eruption and plop it into
Exactly.
Got Me. You know, I mean, it was composed as a solo piece and it stands alone as that. This is just another composition of a solo that, like I said, you could just punch it into any of the rockers on either of these albums, and assuming it's remotely in a similar key, you would never know. You wouldn't bat an eye at it. And then, you know, the beginning, like Gillette's Hey Mike, and then at the end, what does he say? Cool. So lame. So lame. So yeah, Johnny Died at Christmas. The only way it could possibly get a positive vote is to be paired up with Hey Mike.
This is like one of those things like on Jeopardy. You need one point to win. Like you just have to write any answer down and you leave it blank and you lose. That's what happens with these two songs. What do you think, Nick?
Well, Johnny Died on Christmas is the absolute worst song ever recorded. Hey Mike is completely unnecessary. But I have to give it the nod because okay. Johnny Died on Christmas is the Charlie Brown trying to kick the football of music. It can't get any satisfaction whatsoever.
Oh, my God.
I can't argue with that rationale.
Andy?
Johnny Died on Christmas is infinitely better. Hey, Mike. Have you guys ever seen that video? It's probably like 2009, 2010. It's Dave Mustaine performing with some orchestra. Mm-hmm. That's what Hey Mike reminds me of. And I don't know if it's got to be a combination of what he played and how the video sounds, like how he's mixed into it.
That's a good point, because sonically it does kind of have that
but
similar.
Yeah, it's sound. Just bananas and terrible for no reason. And right. And then it's just done. It's just a bunch of fast notes and then nothing. Johnny Died on Christmas. I mean, we talked about it for an hour and a half on Pot of Thunder. It's so fun. I mean, you could say it's one of the worst songs ever by a professional band, but it's so fun to listen to and just pick out things that make you smile or laugh. For entertainment value, hands down, Johnny Died on Christmas.
And just for those who haven't heard Pot of Thunder, some of the classic lines are, Johnny packed his bags, headed west to beat the odds and do his best. He could hear his mama cry, "Don't go, because you're going to die." So she kind of hexed him from the start.
Right.
And then the other was, Johnny said, "Things are getting bad. Don't think they'll get good. I got to get off this crack. Yeah, I think I should."
Yeah.
So final thoughts on Nitro, as we're getting a little bit long here from Talk is Jericho. But first of all, which album do you like best? And what are your final thoughts on Nitro? I'll start off. I'd have to say, out of the two, they're pretty close if you put them side to side like we just did. I'll probably give Hot Wet Dripping with Sweat the edge, just because I think the production is better. I think the solos are a little ramped in. I think Jim's vocals are a little bit less crazy and better for the songs. But overall, I mean, Machine Gun Eddie and Double Trouble, it's hard to beat those two, in my opinion. But I'll go with Hot Wet Dripping with Sweat. And basically, final thing is, once again, this is one of the worst / best bands you'll ever hear, because it is very laughable. But there's a lot of talent between these two guys. They just, once again, perfect mastery and perfect control of their respective instruments, but they both still pretty much suck at putting together proper performances in playing what's best for the song. But I will always listen to these records, and I'll always promote Nitro, because I do enjoy the talent involved, if not the ridiculousness of the effort, if nothing else. Nick, which album do you like best, and final thoughts on Nitro?
I'm going to go with the album via a text message from you earlier today is now going to be called Hot Wiener Dripping with Sauerkraut. That's going to be the winner. And I mean, it's got my favorite song, I Want You, favorite one off of either album.
All right.
I mean, but like you said, I also feel they're pretty even. I was just kind of counting up. I took a tally of, you know, winners and losers here from my list, and they're pretty even. And doing this, going through and listening to the albums and kind of doing a little research and watching a couple of interviews and things, I have respect for the band and for the two, you know, Batty-O and Gillette. It seems that it might have been a record company decision for them to go so over the top, according to an interview I heard with Gillette. So there's so much that's interesting with this band now to me that I'm probably going to pursue some more information here.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Like you said, that was the gimmick. At the time, every band had a gimmick. And rather than being like all those bands in 89 that were kind of following a dying trend, they tried something completely different and you know, carved a little bit of a niche out for themselves. Whether you like it or not is to be seen, but it's different from everything else that you hear. Andy, which album do you like better? And final thoughts on Nitro?
My votes, I'm not going to count the Johnny Died on Christmas versus Hey Mike, but my votes were 5 in favor of OFR, 4 on Hot Wet Dripping with Sweat. So I'm going with OFR. But again, my favorite song out of any of them is Turning Me On, which is on Hot Wet Dripping with Sweat. You can't go wrong with, well, maybe you could, or you can't go right, can't go wrong. Whatever it is, they're equal, I'll say. These two albums are equal. If you like it, you're going to like both of them. If you don't like it, you won't like either one. It's not like they took a drastic change to the other. Final thoughts on Nitro. Like what Nick said, doing more and more research, I found, because basically Nitro is Jim Gillette and Michelangelo Batty-O. Whoever was in the band was just in the band.
Sure.
And they may have turned out some good performances, but you know, it seemed like it was a rotating, like a revolving door of who was on bass and who was on drums. So for all intents and purposes, we're talking about those two guys. I found them to be very charming in interviews. Even though we said they came across as playing it very serious, I don't think they were joking about anything. But they knew it was ridiculous. I mean, the album's called Outrageous.
Right.
They're like, what do you mean this is ridiculous? You know, this is... They understood what was happening. If you just watch these guys talk about, you know, their career, especially now looking back, they seem like they're pretty cool guys who, like Nick said, maybe would have done things differently if they had more control. At least that's the story that we hear now, which maybe that's a hindsight 2020 situation, but I enjoy it quite a bit for what it is. I talk about this all the time on Pot of Thunder. Sometimes a song that we deem to be bad and we laugh at, I enjoy and give it the thumbs up because I get great entertainment value.
You enjoyed it. Right, exactly.
I have a smile on my face. And for whatever reason, it doesn't matter what the reason is, I liked it. I'm in a better mood after hearing it. And that's what happens with Nitro. So there you go.
And I'll say one thing too. In playing with Michael Vaccio, obviously I was laughing kind of about his overplaying, shall we say. The guy's a tremendous guitar player for what he does. And also, too, a very, very nice guy. He couldn't have been cooler to me on stage, talking to him a little bit before. I think I even kept in touch with him a little bit afterwards. So nothing but respect for him as a guy and as a player. For what he does, he's one of the best in the business. So I'll say that. And same with Jim Gillette. Those vocal doublings and triplings and all the stacking is incredible. It'd be very hard to do. So, yes, it's laughable at times, but the talent is definitely there for what they do. So, Chris, take it home. Favorite album of the two and final thoughts on Nitro? Because you're the one guy out of the four of us that I thought would have a real problem with this, but it seems like you've gained a little bit of respect for them now
as well.
Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. Between the two, my preference is the second album. I think I had six votes off the second album versus three for the first one. You know, like I said, I did gain a new appreciation for Batio's playing, especially his rhythm playing and his composition of riffs. Got a whiny dog down here.
Well, that was just Jim Gillette singing.
Yeah, she's doing her Jim Gillette imitation. But yeah, no, I did gain a new appreciation for Nitro. And as anybody knows, I'm entertained by stuff that's so bad it's good. And, you know, I do find that I gain some enjoyment and entertainment from Nitro. And then I'll close with an addendum to a comment you made in this segment, Tooge, that you'll always be listening to these albums. Just never again an earshot of your wife or daughters. All three of them have had absolutely enough of what they were exposed to today while you were preparing for this episode. So, you know, as married men, and I'm not a father, but I would imagine as fathers too, you learn from your mistakes. I would wager a lot of money that you will never play Nitro in their presence again. So
please make that horrible music stop or my ears start bleeding.
Jeez.
Horrible.
Horrible. Well, I have to disagree with my wife. I do agree with Chris and Andy and Nick. And great having you guys as always. We'll have to do more classic album clashes, but there couldn't be any three other guys that I could do one with Nitro with. So at least we got that going for us.
Thank you for having us. It was a blast.
We'll definitely have to do Freight Train in the future. And I look forward to doing more Pod of Thunders with you guys, either in person or on StreamYard. And it's always a pleasure. And I, as always, cherish these moments.
Yes.
As do exactly. We. As do we.
Guys, remember, because you know you're in trouble and it's double trouble.
Dad, is that a ghost singing?